It's not that we always go for the best product and the best approach. We go for the product and the approach that generally people will push because they have something to gain from it. And this is something that is paradigm shifting, and it's very, very new. I mean, this is truly hot off the presses. You know, with the exception of a few veterinarians and a few labs that we've dealt with, and it hasn't been seen publicly. Really, I've been wanting to be able to talk about this for ages because it kills me internally that so many animals suffer when it's not necessary. We can do better. We internally have done better. Now we just have to get it out so that people can utilize it, and so that, you know, animals don't have to go through having their paw chopped off or having their leg amputated. It's not needed.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have another amazing show lined up here. I have Ion Mitchell. He is a scientist with Live Pet, and he has the Companion 60 product. I had him in the past come onto the show, and they talked about their Companion 60 product, C60. But he has something now that they're working on using C60 as a backbone. They have a lot of products they're doing using C60 as a backbone. But this one works with tumors, cancer cells, and they have had amazing results with this. All studies, they have patents on it. They've been working with universities. He's going to show some of the test results that they've had, and he's going to talk about some of these studies. I also have links to some of that information below. They're very excited, or he's really, and his team is too, excited that they can now go public with some of this stuff. What he's looking for, too, are people that want to participate in a case study with their animals. If you have a dog, they're going to focus on dogs who currently has cancer, then you may be someone who can participate in this study. The nice part is it's not chemotherapy. Your animal's not going to lose a limb. But you need to have a situation where your veterinarian is willing to work with Ian and his team. So the information is below on what that those characteristics are. A very, very promising solution for eradicating tumors in pets, in all mammals, actually. It's for mammals, their patents, but they're focusing on pets. And then Ion stays after, and he talks about some other things that he's working on. He's talking about a shingles treatment, you know, the pain that you get around the waist. And then hair. They've created some products that regrow hair. And he'll talk about that in the segment for my Patreons. Again, if you want to sign up for Patreon, I have a link here. And I want to thank those current Patreons who have signed up. Thank you so much. It is really helping get the word out on so many important issues. And I really appreciate it. You are the reason this show is continuing. But it also shows that this is something that's not only important for me, but it's also important to you, and that it's important to everybody else out there. So I want a big thank you for the people who support this program. I also want to tell you, before we get into the interview, I had Ken the Scientist on talking about the negative things that people were hearing about C60. And one thing that we didn't get to in that is the nanoparticle issue with C60. And people are worried about going past the blood-brain barrier and then them being able to take whoever them is, you know, the nefarious characters, which we all know there are many, that are going to take advantage of this to control us. Well, Ion talks about that. He addresses it directly on what the possibilities are of actually being able to control a nanoparticle of C60 in any kind of realistic way, and what the science is behind that. I think you'll find that as very interesting, and hopefully it'll put people's worries to rest. I suppose it, you know, bringing up different issues that we're unaware of should never, you know, we should never stop doing that, but to keep bringing up issues that aren't issues and that it's, you know, it's a, the science says it's not an issue, I think it's important to address it so the fears are gone, and it's something that's so good for you can clear the path so that people know about it and will use it. But now that being said, let's get into my interview with Ion Mitchell. Hi, Ion. Welcome back to the program.
Hey, Sarah. Thanks for having us back.
Well, I am like, I'm so excited to talk to you. I love talking to you about this stuff. And I know this show is going to be really, really fascinating and interesting for people. They just have to hold on to their hats and wait for some of this amazing stuff that you're going to share with us.
Yeah, this we've been wanting to and waiting to talk about this for a couple of years. So this is a great time to do it.
Before we get into all this amazing stuff, I've had some listeners who are really fearful. I know you work with C60 a lot as a base of a lot of your products, and they're very fearful of the nanotechnology that's going out, and they think it's, you know, with the AI and things, and they're worried because C60 is a nano product. It's very small, nanomolecule.
Right.
And so they're worried how that can affect us. And can you talk about how there's a lot of confusion around this and how people should pretty not be so worried about this?
Yeah, I've heard actually a lot of talk lately about that. And it's kind of funny. Personally, I'm more worried about large macromolecular meter sized chunks of carbon falling on me like pieces of coal, but nanometer scale stuff. I think the crux of the issue is people are worried about, you know, the fact that it passes the blood brain barrier and then the ability to manipulate it. I mean, that's kind of the scuttlebutt of what I've heard. The issue there is if you're going to elicit a response from a neuron, right? Neurons fire electrochemically. There are actually two primary mechanisms that they use to fire, but you'd actually have to elicit that response via some sort of electrical impulse. And you could transmit an electrical impulse, but carbon-60 is dielectric in the capacity it functions in your body. So it's not going to be something, and dielectric just in the sense of it's an insulator. So you wouldn't want to use an insulator to do anything like that. It's really not plausible. I mean, iron in your blood is a conductor. I mean, you could manipulate hemoglobin, you could manipulate water. Carbon-60 is not really, if you were, you know, the nefarious Dr. Evil sort, you probably would be looking at something entirely different to do that. And I have no doubt that people work on, you know, different sorts of ways to manipulate things, you know, microwaves and the different technologies associated with that. But this, it's relatively biologically inert, and especially in terms of neural manipulation, it's just not plausible. Again, I mean, you'd use a conductor. You wouldn't use something that's biologically inert and a dielectric.
There's so many other better ways to do it than this. I mean, that's the whole point.
They're not. There's ways to manipulate and change things. Yeah, but you're totally right. There really would be. Yeah.
Okay, and that's what I want people to realize is that the benefits of C60 is so amazing, and it doesn't really make sense because our other vitamins and minerals and water even is a better conductor than C60.
Sure. If you wanted to do that, yes, that would be the way to do it. So, yeah, just to completely assuage any concerns, yeah, that's not how you'd go about it. It's fundamentally inert. And to elicit that kind of response would be almost impossible.
Okay, well, then let's move on. Okay. So thank you so much for clearing that up. Let's talk about what you have going on. First, share with us what you have going on.
Okay, so obviously we have Companion-60, and you know we've been working on helping pets with their joints, and a lot of people are taking it now as well, which is not the intended use, but pretty much
it's for mammals, right?
It's for mammals, and it's in fact patented for mammals, as is what we're talking about today is also patented for mammals. Our focus has been, you know, canine, equine, feline, with all of this stuff though, and before we've been able to elicit these great
responses. Dogs and cats, right?
Yeah, dogs, cats, and horses. And we've been able to really fix a lot of deep-seated issues. And there's a whole host of components that C60 allows you to manipulate and change and upregulate and downregulate. And one of the things that we noticed early on was a response with, you know, neoplastic cells or cancers. And so for the past 4 years, we had taken some of the initial data that we had, and we figured out a way to create a different type of conjugated molecule with carbon as a backbone. In this case, carbon-60 is a backbone. And there's a typical chemotherapy agent called cisplatin, and it's actually very efficacious. It works really well, but the issues with it are that it causes renal failure. So you start having kidney issues and renal duct issues and things like that. But that's because it's built on a platinum molecule. And in terms of mechanistically how things actually function, it's kind of similar in that cisplatin wraps around the H&G protein and binds to it, and it inhibits transcription. Our system does a similar thing, but because it's on a carbon backbone that's biologically inert, since we're carbon-based organisms, it doesn't have the same degree of toxicity or any of the other things that would normally be considered bad side effects. So we've spent literally years now and done hundreds of tests and have worked with, you know, cancer researchers to really hone down what we're doing. And so we're at the point where our patents are in, they're, you know, being processed as we speak. And so now we can effectively come out and talk about it, which is what we were hoping to do, because we'd really like to work on a protocol and develop the protocol so that this can get out and we can, you know, take any dog that has a cancer and really hone down on how to fix them, how to help. And that's what we do here.
And are you looking for people who have, you know, dogs or an animal, dogs, because I think that's what you're saying, who might want to participate in a study?
Yeah, actually we are. We set up an email address, which is stopcancer@lifepetllc.com. And anybody who has a dog with cancer that would be interested in talking to us, please email something to that address and we will get back with you, because we'll drill down on the specifics of where they are, what type it is. Because a huge number of animals are affected by cancer. You know, there's well over 50% of the dogs that die are affected by cancer. And it's a big problem, and it's something that we can really help with.
And people are like 1 out of 7 right now. I don't know if they die from it, but 1 out of 7 women are getting breast cancer. And there's, so mammals in general are getting cancer off the charts, and dogs are much worse.
Yeah, they're unfortunately sort of leading the charge. I think the environmental stresses that take a toll on people, and we're all well aware of those, they do the same thing with most mammalian systems. So dogs and cats, they all have those issues. And so we're trying to address that and fix it.
Okay, so let's get into what you're doing, the tests that you've performed. I mean, you're working with universities, you're working with, you know, you're patenting it, you're spending a lot of money doing this, but you're working on, and you're focusing on dogs and cats and pets and horses.
Right.
Because it's doable, right? Because to get a drug out for humans is like billions of dollars. For animals, it's $22 million or something.
Yeah, for humans, last year it was over, the average was over $2 billion. And for animals, it's a fraction of that, a very small fraction of that. But really, you know, our crux here is we really are trying to help. I mean, my animals impact my life. My dogs are, you know, they're a huge component of my life. And the same is pretty much true across the board with everybody here. So, yeah, we want to elicit that change and make sure that we can fix the components that really affect your heart. And, you know, animals do that. I mean, I come home at the end of the day, my dog is lovingly happy to see me and has, you know, no holds barred affection and basically tackles me every day. That's, you know, it's kind of how
Aren't
I wrap
they
things.
Awesome. My dog will open the door and we have like this circle driveway and we open the door and she runs around the circle driveway and then comes back in the house. And we're always like, why did you just do that?
She's happy. She's genuinely happy to see you.
And they have this, big frontal lobe that allows them a more of a spiritual connection. I just was talking to Jonathan Otto about biblical health secrets, and they have this big lobe that allows them to, gives them that, all that emotion.
Well, yeah. And there's a definitive connection. I know Rupert Sheldrake has done a bunch of research showing the connection between animals and their owners. And the other day, my son was at the door when I got home late at night, and the dog had been up there, Chance, my oldest dog, had run up to the door and was just barking furiously. And when I walked in, my son Max said, "Oh, I didn't even know you were here." And, you know, he didn't, but a minute before I got there, Chance had run up to the door and was just waiting for me, which is fantastic. You know, that's the kind of stuff I love. So where we can help, we're going to help. And that's something that at this point we know we can help. So we've done hundreds of tests and really refined the process. And there's a couple of really critical steps. I mean, cancers, not to tell everybody things they already know, but the metabolically they function and they use, you know, aerobic glycolysis, and they can actually metabolically switch how they're growing and what they're utilizing in a mammalian body to propagate growth. And so we had to really drill down on how do you elicit changes? How do you manipulate that system? Because it's not, I always jokingly say, three-legged stools don't wobble, because you have to take into account what you don't introduce into a system, what you do introduce into a system, and very specifically the timing whereby you introduce it to the system. And so it took literally quite a few years to get everything kind of drilled down. And I think we can even do a better job of it. I mean, our rates of ability to inhibit the metastatic spread of cancer, which is what our focus is what we are patenting is an anti-metastatic for cancer, because metastasis kills, you know, over 80% of anything that dies from cancer dies because it metastasizes.
And that's the cells replicating very quickly, which and is cancer. Yeah.
Well, it's not just the rapidity with which they, you know, proliferate. The thing that really gets you is it spreads. It's called distal metastasis, which basically just means it moves to a different organ system or location in the body. And what happens is, you know, the cancers block out the functioning of different organs, and that causes systemic failure. And so you'll die from some other system failing, not actually from the cancer itself, but from some inhibition of a primary system you need. And so our process basically is set up to lock down the metastasis. And we've been incredibly successful at blocking metastasis. And once you block the metastasis, there are plenty of things you can do. You can have it surgically taken out. You know, you can do focused chemo or radiation. There are lots of different modalities that can affect that. But there are a lot of really great universities that have published research on it, and they've all seemingly had different components on the mechanisms whereby they can shut it down. Like Johns Hopkins published a paper that pointed out that IL-6 and IL-8, which are two cytokines, so they're markers of inflammation in a body. If you can downregulate those or downregulate the receptors catching the signal from them, then you can inhibit the spread of cancer. So that's one component. And we have done a ton of cytokine testing specifically on IL-6, which is indicated in a whole host of things, you know, autoimmune disorders, rheumatoid arthritis, which is a subset of that, cancers, neural disorders. All of those things relate to inflammation because it's one of the precursors that really sets up systems for problems. And so we've inhibited the propagation of the interleukins so much so that it slows that process down. The other component of that is, in order for cancer to spread, the mitochondria, which are the powerhouses in your cell, have to be fundamentally broken. So there's two different components. There's an electron transport chain overload, and then there's an electron transport chain suppression. And you need both components of that. There was in 2014, there was a paper from the Université Catholique in Belgium that showed that they had changed the way, using tyrosine kinases, they had changed the way that those functions occurred, and it stopped the ability for metastatic spread. So that in and of itself is not 100%, and the IL-6 in and of itself is not 100%. But if you combine those two factors, you can, at least our experimental data has shown thus far, both in vitro and in vivo, because we've done work in the lab hundreds of times, then we've done animals, you can actually shut it down. And so...
And when you say shut it down, at what percent are you seeing in your studies?
Well, if you can show one of the pictures, the rat that you'll see there it had a prostate tumor that was grown to a tumor burden, and then after 3.5 days of receiving this treatment, the remainder shown in green is what was left, and that's it's a marked difference, you know, somewhere upwards of 60% reduction. And But it's really critical because that particular experiment, after we saw that tremendous reduction, the guys in the lab made a couple of modifications unbeknownst to us, and we saw a really harsh turn and had to do a couple of things to get it under control. But that was actually one of the best things that happened, because that was many years ago, and early on we realized, we can block these things, but we also have to control, you know, glycogen stores in the liver. And it, actually, there was a paper that came out literally last Thursday from Duke University pointing out that, liver glycogen gets gobbled up by metastatic cancer. And they actually said the phrase, it's like a kid in a candy store. And that's totally true, because if you don't deplete the liver glycogen, you still have a resource whereby, you know, the cancer can go and it can get it and it can metastatically spread. So you have to do, that's one of the components. You have to really deplete the liver of glycogen in order to be able to shut down the potential spread. And then you have to also introduce other agents, which is what our serums are doing, to downregulate all the functioning of the cancer.
And now, my understanding is if you really control the animal's environment, what they eat, what they do, the timing of everything, you could feasibly up that percentage by quite a bit.
Yes, absolutely. That's why I think this is feasible for dogs, and I wouldn't even want to approach trying it for humans, because humans, one, don't follow instructions, and dogs, they're in a controlled environment. They don't own a debit card. They can't go out and, you know, buy a bag of Cheetos and gobble something down that's going to spike their glycemic index. You can very programmatically say, we need to do this at this time and this at this time. And you can isolate all the different factors and, you know, introduce the serums at the right time so that you can really have a very pronounced effect.
Yeah, because for humans, if they were going to take it, they'd have to follow the strict protocol that you can easily do on a dog.
Right.
And, you know, and so this is something that is going to work really well because owners of pets can really control it. Now, if they aren't serious about it, then it doesn't work either, right? I mean, if the owner blows it off, it's not going to work.
Right. It's not that, you know, you can give little Muffy a bag of, you know, dog treat biscuits. That completely eradicates all of the benefit that you're doing. So you really have to do everything very programmatically. And if there were, a really small sort of tumor or something like that, it's not as necessary to really adhere to everything. And just, you know, a solution that has carbon-60 would have some benefit to it. But it's not.
You mean carbon-60 all by itself with a small tumor for a mammal would, where it hasn't taken over, would probably be enough to jump up your immune system and go at it.
It would boost your immune system. And we actually have a lot of data on this. Unfortunately, you know, initially we thought, maybe this will just do it, but it doesn't. And I wish it did, because it would be fantastically great. And then all the animals that are getting C60 now would have no issues, but that's sadly not the case.
But it would be a prohibitor from getting it in the first place.
Yeah, it definitely, if there were a very small incidence, yes, it would slow it down. The unfortunate problem with that is sometimes if you slow down the progression, right, the proliferation starts to retard a bit, then the cells that are remaining can pick up steam and really go to town and keep proliferating at a rapid rate, because they're not subject to the same sort of toxicity that you're giving to those particular cells.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, you really have to be right. The strong survive and then they take off.
But now, when it comes to just, because you brought up the C60, mm-hmm. like with animals with this other product that you have, you have to control their environment quite a bit. Now, if someone was taking C60 and was eating Cheetos and Skittles, it would it would screw up the benefit of C60, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you can't introduce really horrible stuff into the system. I mean, and it's a very, very simple equation. You know, good stuff in, good stuff out, bad stuff in, bad stuff out. So I think the technical term from your background would be GIGO, right? Garbage in, garbage out. That's kind of the computer lingo for it. So it holds true biologically too.
Junk in, junk out. Any language for it. You eat, you are what you eat.
That's it. Yeah. And in this case, if you put your dog on the right type of diet, and it is strict. I think actually one of the people that was doing it, she said that the hardest part was taking her dog who, you know, they were contemplating putting down and not giving him treats and putting him in a state where he was really hungry and kind of upset because he wasn't eating with the rest of the pack. And that's hard. I mean, when you see someone you love or something you love that's having a real issue, you want to do everything you can palliatively to smooth that over and make it good for them. And in this case, it's a bit of tough love. So,
which is hard. And anybody who has children, especially teenagers, you know what that's like.
Yes.
Really hard. They don't like you many times, and it's hard. No. Okay, well, you've performed a lot of tests. You've performed it on multiple animals. Can you talk about the testing that you've done, and then sure. What cancers that you've been working with? What kinds of tumors?
Well, okay, so there are lots of different types. I mean, you can think of easily over 250 different types of cancer. So the spectrum is really broad. But we've worked on primarily sarcomas and carcinomas and a little bit of lymphoma. And those really relate to the type of tissue that they originate from, you know, mesenchymal tissue, epithelial tissue, things like that. But we've worked on over 20 different cancers and had pretty great responses with all of them.
They've all responded the same way.
Yes, they have all responded very, very, very well.
And over 60%, and if you can control the environment and what they eat, could possibly be much higher.
Yeah, well, and, you know, if you're looking at something in vitro, right, the in vitro data was very high. But that's when you have cells, you know, trapped in a petri dish and you look at it in your lab, you know, you put it on a well plate and you run it. And those were, you know, 97.2% over 48 hours. But again, that's not in a, you know, in a living biological system. That's in a lab.
That's why you don't want to say 97.2% in 48 hours, because it was so controlled. But
exactly.
Putting it out to people when they have to feed them and do all these things, you don't want to say it's that. It's just because it's the real life. Yes.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing. You're not going to get the same response in a living organism that you can in a petri dish, because everything gets exposure to it. So it's far, far less than that. And again, the rigidity whereby you actually introduce all of these things has to be maintained. You have to really maintain very, very tight controls on it, both in terms of what you don't eat, when you take the serum, what type of serum you take. And we've programmed that out. You know, one of the new products that we're coming out with that will play into this is it's a higher strength version, you know, more carbon-60 per unit volume. And one of the other components, the serapeptase, this radiopeptidase, it's a proteolytic enzyme. And that's because we noticed that there was such a rapid cleaving of the cancer cells that we were left with these necrotic masses. So the active cancer cells, much like in that picture that you'll show, that was, you know, the span from the purple mass where they were alive to the green mass where all of the other stuff is, you know, the only green is still living. That was really incredibly quick, but you're still left with this large mass of necrotic tissue. And if you try and process that out of the body too quickly, you know, your dog will end up with a thing called a Herxheimer reaction, where it's systems are overloaded trying to process out toxins from all of the, you know, the cells where you've, you know, cracked all the membranes and the cell contents are spilling out. So you have to be really careful that you do it on a time scale where the animal can handle the amount of, you know, toxic byproducts that are still in the system and flush them out of its system in the lymph and through, you know, excretory measures as it needs to and still maintain health.
So now if the body's immune system is pretty broken down, so if you end up having this big mass of toxic, that's what you're saying, this tumor is toxic and it's a big mass, your immune system is already pretty, and they just can't handle it. So how do you slowly do that? How would be?
Well, okay. So you look at our Companion 60 product. The idea there was that it enhances, we always say enhances the immune system back to normal levels. And most animals, when they're sick, they have a reduction in their capacity. So we enhance the adenosine triphosphate production intracellularly, and we have data that has, it's a pretty big span. You know, we've seen an 18 to 30% increase very definitively in terms of ATP production, and that the lipids that you use, it's actually, you don't see the same response in different lipids. So the reason we focus on the olive oil with a very specific ratio of oleic acid is because we can get that response over and over. And that's not to say that other lipids aren't great for other things, because they very much are.
And when you're saying lipids, different oils.
Just different oils, right. But for this purpose, the way we've set it up is because we're eliciting a specific response intracellularly and upticking the ATP. So that brings your energy level up and your immune system comes up in accord with it. So that allows, you know, an animal who's beaten down a bit to bring their immune system back up and their body to start processing out all of the toxins in a much better way. You know, the reason we've upped for the new formulation, the concentration of C60 is very specifically to work in accord with the anti-metastatic serum, because there's a cycling that you have to do between the two, because you have to cause an ATP suppression and slow the proliferation of different cells, specifically the cancerous cells, but then you need to change pretty rapidly and proliferate more of the healthy, strong energy in your cells. You want to up the ATP in your cells so that your body is functioning and really strong. And so when you do that in an animal, you can see that the fluctuation between the two elicits a great response, because they don't feel really sick, but the components in their body, you know, the tumor, responds very quickly and gets zapped very, very
effectively. And then it allows, by doing the C60 in combination with the serum, it allows the body to naturally flush out those toxins and the killed tumor.
Yeah, exactly. And so what you're trying to do is you're trying to take out the bad, bring in the good, and balance the systems out. And, you know, a good part of that is, that's why I say it's three-legged stools, no wobble. You have to make sure that they're eating the right things at the right times, then they're taking the serum at the right point, and then they're balancing it out with the, you know, the companion 60 or the derivation of companion 60 that we'll be using in accord with this serum, so that it elicits the same response where they feel stronger and healthier.
Now, the cancers that you focus on, are those the most common?
Yeah, we've worked on hemangiosarcoma, which is a, you know, a blood cancer in dogs, and it's unfortunately very fatal. So from the time your dog is diagnosed with it, they basically have 3 to 6 months to live, and there is at this point no real cure for it. I would like to think that our therapy will help to change the way that people approach these things over time. And then lymphomas are very, very common, and sarcomas are very, very common. So the hemangiosarcoma, actually, even though it is in the blood, it is a sarcoma. So,
well, and you have six types of breast cancers. Now, are those also common in dogs? Are they common in humans too, the same six breast cancer
well,
types?
Well, actually, the breast cancer types that we tested, they were human breast cancer types. And we've, you know, some, there's a lot of overlap in terms of the different types of tissues. But in order to test, you know, we tested, you know, the estrogen receptor types and estrogen, progesterone, HER2, triple negative breast cancer. There's a whole host. And those responded fantastically. That was actually a really positive thing, was the response in those was great. And I'd like to think that at some point, someone, probably not us internally, because we're not really geared for human things, will take these ideas and do something with them, you know, down the road for people. But
and the amazing part is that this is starting to be disseminated. I mean, the knowledge of what you're doing is now beyond you. It's patented. You've been working with universities. If you know, the bus factor, if you get hit by a bus tomorrow, it won't matter. It'll go on because you've disseminated it enough where it's a life on its own, right?
I think people at this point, there have been enough people that we've worked with at a couple of different universities that have seen what it's doing and have seen the efficacy. Sometimes comically so, where they'll look at it and go, you know, is this hydrochloric acid? Is this, you know, mercury? How are you eliciting this kind of response this quickly?
Well, I laughed too when I first heard about it, right? We were laughing.
Yeah,
but go ahead.
It is a bit comical in a sense, but yeah, the knowledge has been disseminated. It's getting out there. You know, our patent will be approved shortly, but it's all finalized and in. And that was actually gleeful for us, because we really have. We've done hundreds of tests and spent huge amounts of time and energy and resources getting this to a point where we felt confident that we could put our seal of approval on it. I mean, that's one of the things that we're probably a little bit over the top in terms of how much research we've done on this. But it's a very nuanced thing, because cancer is pretty insidious. You know, it changes metabolically. It manipulates the way that it assimilates nutrients and, you know, vascularizes. And in order to really tackle something like that, you have to look at all of the different possible combinations. Not to say that we've looked at them all, because there's myriad combinations, but you have to really drill down and get a good sense of what's the next probable move that this is going to use to be able to circumvent the therapeutic here. And we've done that, and we've done a very good job of it, in my opinion. And the efficacy is very substantial. And that's why at this point, it would be really nice to get some people to work with their vets and with us, so we could really hone down on the absolute best way to fix canine cancers at this point.
And again, we should talk about that study, because you're trying to find people, or dogs, people, not people, but people with dogs,
yeah,
who would be perfect candidates for this.
Yes.
Explain what kind of candidate you're looking for.
If we can find someone that has a reasonably advanced cancer, that's probably the best. But it needs to span the gamut a bit. We should look at some that are not, you know, stage 2, stage 3 kind of things that are pushing towards the very bad sorts of metastasis and things like that. But we'd actually like to get a good spectrum. Not to mention, tomorrow, if we could fix this for every dog everywhere, we'd do it in a heartbeat. We just don't have the bandwidth to do that. So the idea is that we'll start working with some people and some vets, because the idea is different. It's very out of the box. You know, if you try and solve a problem the same way that everybody else has tried to solve the problem, probably not going to do it. And we took a very different approach, and as fate would have it, it worked. And so now we're just trying to hone it down so that we can get it out to more people, show different veterinarians that, hey, look, this is a possibility. You don't have to have a dog that's going to die in the next couple of months if they have hemangiosarcoma. You know, you can extend their lifespan. Not to say that it's going to cure everything in the known universe, because it won't. But it, in terms of the effect on the quality of life, that's what you really need to focus on. Because you're not going to, if somebody has a dog that has stage 4 cancer and it's really everywhere in its system, you're probably not going to be able to reverse that entirely. In great part, because even if you killed all the cancer in just a couple of days, you'd still be left with these huge necrotic masses that would be breaking down, and they'd have systemic toxicity and, you know, have to go on antibiotics. And there's a whole host of things that are complications. And that's why, like I said, it's such an insidious disease. But if you can bring the quality of life up and give them energy so that, you know, I have friends and I've seen dogs that have gone through chemo, and it's horrific. It's not something that I would do. And the long-term rates of benefit, I don't think they're viable. You know, if you're looking at something that has a 97% failure rate long-term, and granted, I've heard lots of different numbers bandied around, but knowing that you could do something that's going to enhance your quality of life and leave you physically stronger and healthier in lieu of leaving you sick and feeling really poor and not having energy to do things, if you can do the counter to that, that's what you should do, in my opinion.
Now, is there a requirement that the veterinarian needs to work with you as well?
Yes, 100%. Yeah, this is something where the testing has to be there, because people are going to need to talk to their vet. I'll need to deal with their vet. They'll need to do very specific testing, because we'll want to look at, you know, blood work and scans, because we need to know what's going on. And, you know, we've done it on small scales, but in order to do a broader scale to really drill down and figure out the best way to help, we're at the point where we need to have more data and more people. And there's nothing here that's harmful. Everything we've done, this is why the idea that of carbon 60 being something that's detrimental, and, you know, it's just not there. I mean, there have been so many studies. I still take the stuff in ridiculous quantities and feel healthy as a horse. In fact, you know, I take the actual quantities for a horse and love it. And I don't see any detrimental effects. I give it to my dogs all the time. That's in great part what my dog Pants is so boisterous, is he's 11 and he's got a ton of energy.
But do you
Whereas
think
5 years ago he didn't?
My dog is so much, her skin is so much softer. She's just, but now there has been some legitimate questions on not the C60 being the issue, but the carrier. Like, is it okay to have that much olive oil or that much coconut oil?
That's
you know, because the C60 itself, can't we eventually get to a point where the carrier, we might have other ways of taking C60 because the carrier itself might be more of an issue.
It is. And in one of our early clinical trials, we couldn't explain why the cytokines, again, the markers of inflammation, were skewed up so much at a certain point in time. And what we were able to figure out is that it wasn't the C60 that was causing the inflammation. It was the body having to process that much oil over that brief a period. So when they're completely bombarded with lipids, and it really doesn't matter if it's, you know, olive oil or coconut oil or avocado oil, those metabolize differently. You know, the coconut oil is primary medium chains and it goes to the liver. Avocado oil's got a big component of oleic acid, so it's very similar to olive oil, but they all metabolize kind of in similar fashions, and you'll overload the system. You'll have too much oil, which again is part of the reason that we've gone for the higher strength kind of combinatory effects, whereby we've been able to get more in a small unit volume or a smaller unit volume, is because it's important to get it in there, but you don't want to. I mean, if you ate an entire stick of butter every day, you'd probably feel the response, you know, kind of being a bit sluggish. And likewise, if you're giving a sick pup, you know, a few tablespoons of oil, it's going to slow them down. And so we're trying to, you know, manipulate that. That was one of the things that we really early on realized that we'd have an issue with. So we're trying to kind of buffer that so that they don't have such an issue with it.
Yeah, because legitimately, when people are worried if they see any negative, it's probably not the C60, or we don't, it's the oil.
No, it probably isn't the C60, you know, because it's going to be in your body for a while, and it's going to, you know, wedge around the mitochondrial membranes, but it's going to buffer oxidative stresses, and it's going to be terrific, because, I mean, we know from tons of work that it drops your cytokine markers, specifically, like I said, the IL-6, and when that happens, you have fewer issues with, you know, arthritis, which we've cited, and, you know, and cancers and Alzheimer's and all sorts of conditions that are inflammatory in nature. So it's not really the C60. It's the fact that you're trying to get it into your body with tons and tons and tons of fat. I mean, I actually primarily eat a ketogenic diet, despite the fact that I'm a vegetarian. I really work on doing a ketogenic diet, a cyclic ketogenic diet.
And by the way, there's a free summit coming up on how to do that. So I'm going to put that plug in there and put the link below, because if it's important. It really helps. But keep going.
Well, it does. It makes a huge difference. So you have to kind of get an organism into the state where they aren't being overloaded, even though they may metabolize fats as their primary fuel source, which is what I do. But it's still, you don't want to take too many of the wrong type of fats at a particular time.
Yeah. But okay. So I eventually see C60 being something that's actually like a vitamin. I mean, we have different ways we take vitamins. I really see it as a vitamin.
Yeah, over time, I hope everyone starts taking it. I mean, my particular take after, you know, going on 6 years of taking this stuff personally is it enhances your energy, gives you more clarity and more focus. And again, those are just my personal takes on it. But it's also something that I've seen in other people too. All the guys around the company take it. And I think it's fantastic. And I hope that eventually everybody gets past the idea that there could be anything that's strange or detrimental about it and starts moving to an area where people just take it. I think in
like
15
vitamin
20,
C.
Yeah, I think in 15 or 20 years, everybody will take it. I mean, if, you know, the numbers that were thrown around between 170 and 270 times stronger than vitamin C, depending on which thing you read. But it's a really strong antioxidant, the strongest anybody's found yet. Why would you not take that? You know, I mean,
exactly.
Yeah, our experience in both, you know, lab tests and animals and, you know, taking it ourselves, it's all been positive. And I hope that 10 or 15 years from now, everybody realizes that and they just, you know, pop a tablet in the morning of whatever C60 lipid compound they're going to take.
Well, and I love the fact that you're spending millions of dollars with university tests and clinical studies and everything else. Now, I mean, it's a big deal. Now, is there any way people can look at some of this stuff? I know you have so many things that are proprietary, but what can they get to look at so they can see that there is thousands of tests with this and studies?
Yeah, we will post some of the data. I will send it to you and you can put it in the show notes along with the studies from Johns Hopkins and Duke and the other universities that have come up with the same differing components. It's interesting that all of this knowledge is moving towards one point of culmination. And I think for whatever reason, we have something that does those particular components, which is terrific. And I'd like to see it get out to more and more people. But
exactly.
To that end, you know, I'd like to openly show a lot of that data that we can and get people's feedback. There's some forums that, you know, I frequent a lot where I know the people now will be thinking about C60 conjugates and how that might elicit a really great response for, you know, cancers and things like that.
Well, that's what's making it work, right? Because you have the serum that deals with the, you know, stopping the spread of the cancer, but then the C60 is the key along with that to deal with the toxins. Yeah. I mean, you have to have both.
And they're both built on a C60 backbone. And that's what's so interesting about that.
So even your serum for the metastasis is a C60.
Yes. It is. It's built on a carbon backbone. And the reason for that is no toxicity. So you end up with something that's effectively a very therapeutic agent that's really going to make a huge dent. And, you know, if you post some of the studies in the show notes, it is eye-poppingly impressive. But you have to kind of temper that and realize, you know, these are lab tests. And again, it's very different when you put something in an actual body.
Well, you're in an environment getting bombarded by all the electronics we have and all sorts of other things. There's other things in an environment. The real life has many other factors.
The exosome, all of the external factors that impact you biologically. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, you have another product called P53.
Oh,
what is
that? That's actually not a product. That is a type of genetically modified rat. And it's P53 knockout rats. And one of our tests was done on P53 knockouts. And P53 is your tumor suppressor gene. So if you take out the P53 gene, which is what we did in these rats, you're left with no suppression of tumors. So they idiopathically, which just means they spontaneously produce tumors all over their body, and that's what kills them. And it does it 100% of the time. That's just how it works.
You've modified this to be cancer lab rats. Did you modify this, or is this a common deal?
No, it's a common thing. We actually, we purchase these from Sage Research. And so they provide genetically modified rats where you have different knockouts to elicit different metabolic responses. And in this case, P53 knockouts are cancer rats. And they always produce cancers and die of cancer. And that's just how it happens. So when we did our testing, that was not actually the case. And it's funny because a lot of people, and I alluded to this on the first time we talked, I think, our data, we got a 93% increase in median lifespan, which was surprising. That was not really what we were expecting.
And those are rats that are supposed to die of cancer. They keep getting tumors, and you were able to keep them alive.
Well, and it wasn't just that we were able to keep them alive, because we were looking at ways to minimize...
You were actually keep them 93% past a normal lifespan.
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
That's a big deal. Okay.
Yeah, so they were living 193% of their median lifespan. And there are thousands of these rats. So they have really defined mortality curves. You can look back at historical data and see, you know, they were homozygous. So it was negative homozygous knockouts. So you could see that it is going to die at this point. And we extended past that another 93%. So their lifespan was 193% of what it would have been normally. Now that obviously.
But was that still less than what a normal rat would be?
No, it's 193% of a normal rat lifespan. So,
so not just a normal P53 knockout rat.
I misunderstood. Yeah.
Okay.
It's not as long as a normal rat would live. And the reason you do that is so you can see what kind of effect you get very quickly, because they have a very short lifespan. But ours actually live to kind of the low end of some of the more normal rat lifespans. But still not what you'd expect if you had just a normal heterozygous type, you know, or wild type rat, which have, you know, they have an even longer lifespan. But the thing that was really compelling about it, and since we were focusing on inflammation at the time, a lot of people, you know, wanted a recreation of an experiment that Fathi Moussa had done, in 2012. And we weren't so interested in doing that. And that's why we didn't really publish anything or put the data out. Internally, we wanted to figure out ways to suppress inflammatory responses. And with our particular serums, not only did we get 193% of the median lifespan, but five of the six P53s didn't have tumors at all. And the one that did have a tumor, because we had necropsies done after the fact and histology done so we could look at the cells, there was only one that had a tumor, and it did not die from the tumor. It actually died from a femoral hemorrhage. So it was... The data was very bizarre, to say the least. I mean, you don't expect to see, you know, tumor rats that have no tumors. So we knew that was a huge, you know, sign in the right direction. We were very much moving in the right direction. And so we just kept honing it down and honing it down until we ended up with something that is really very efficacious and works very, very well.
Okay, so how, I know you're getting response from scientists and labs have been, my response of it is almost laugh. You're like, oh my God, this is so amazing. But what have your response been from veterinarians?
It's been I won't say mixed bag because it's such a different response biologically that one group thought that they had stumbled upon because there was a large mass of a tumor that was all the cells were dead. They were necrotic. And they couldn't understand how this particular type of tumor, since they had actually screened it before and they knew what it was, they couldn't understand how that had occurred. Despite the fact that, you know, we were saying that, you know, this is the progression, this is what actually happens, this is the response it elicits. So they said, well, it must be some type of new fungus that we've never seen before, or new bacterium that's been introduced. And it was kind of comical because you want to go, no, this is actually what would happen if this works exactly the way that this patent says it works.
Is this but like the Native American seeing the ship, Columbus' ship, and not see being able to see the ship because they've never seen a ship before?
Yeah. There's definitely a bit of occlusion mentally when you're not used to the concept. Conceptually, this kind of thing hasn't been done before. Biologically, these kind of responses don't exist. And so when you see something like that happening, yeah, there's a lot of obstinance and reluctance to just accept the new concept and go, yeah, wow, this is great. Let's move with this. Hopefully, over time, people will do that. But the adoption curve is slow, you know, and especially when you're doing really cutting edge stuff, the adoption curve is sometimes a generation or painfully slow. I hope that people in vet schools see this and understand what's going on and start to make changes. If not, I mean, we're the only guys that are doing something like this right now, and I think it will become more and more prevalent because I'm sure that people will start to see and understand the methodologies that we've used to arrive at where we're at with our particular antimetastatic and start thinking about things in a, you know, kind of the larger gestalt of the thing, a more broad concept of what's possible, which is great in and of itself.
So now how can people get your stuff? I mean, how can they get hold of you? I know you have that study, and we have an email to if you think you're a candidate. How about your products and things?
Well, they can go to the website where we have Companion 60, and they can either go to lifepedllc.com or companion60.com and pick up the products there. For the antimetastatic serum, it's not being released yet. We really want to have it honed down so that we can give everyone really, really definitive instructions. It's kind of like the dosing. I think we're the only people that really have a very defined dosing schedule, and part of that is no one really wants to say anything about humans, but for animals, we have, you know, we've worked out a very defined dosing schedule for dogs and cats and horses and are very free with, you know, the knowledge about how to do that. And
well, which helps because you get all these questions from people on dosing and everybody's like, well, I don't, they're afraid. And I know me and you have had a long conversation on dosing, and it's so important. And so the point that you've done that for mammals maybe can help humans, but it's not the same thing.
It's not the same thing. You have to allometrically scale based on the species and adjust, you know, different metabolic rates are going to require a different dosing. And in order to really peg that down, before we let the antimetastatic out into the market or even, you know, are really looking at that as a very viable thing, I expect it'll be in the next year probably or possibly even less, but we really want to have a bunch of veterinarians and a bunch of animals that we've successfully worked through their issues with and really been able to help, because this is not something where we're going to put anything out if it's not completely proper. But by the time it comes out of LivePet, it's good, you can use it, and it's going to elicit the response we said it will.
And the amazing thing is you don't have to have chemotherapy. You don't have to chop off part of their limbs. Like my poor little dog has a foot missing now because she had cancer.
Yeah.
You don't lose a body part, and you don't have to have your dog go through chemotherapy, and you don't have to spend thousands and thousands of dollars on your pet.
Just as a reasonably bright person, you know, certainly not the smartest guy in the world, but as a reasonably bright person, when you look at something and say, oh, they have an issue, let's cut it off. I understand that that may be the state of the art right now, but it really is, in a sense, a bit barbaric, and we can do better. I mean, just as a group of thinking individuals in a particular species, we can do better.
Then just that off. Yes.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of, and this makes me nerdy, but it reminds me of a Star Trek episode where the doctor was talking about, I don't know if it was the old Star Trek, a new one, but it was something that modern medicine was doing. And he was like, oh my God, that's so barbaric.
Yeah. That's where we're at.
And, yeah, I know.
And And I understand that based on current methodologies and current technology that's in the, you know, the overall space and community medically and, you know, in terms of what veterinarians have access to, that's sometimes the best they can do. And all those guys generally that I've met, they really are trying to do the best thing that's possible with what they have and what they know and what, unfortunately, they're allowed to do legally, because there are a lot of confines and restrictions that are placed on them, and they have to operate within those guidelines very rigidly. And this is something that is paradigm shifting, and it's very, very new. I mean, this is truly hot off the presses. And it, you know, with the exception of a few veterinarians and a few labs that we've dealt with, and it hasn't been seen publicly. So, I mean, really, I've been wanting to be able to talk about this for ages, because it kills me internally that so many animals suffer when it's not necessary. We can do better. We internally have done better. Now we just have to get it out so that people can utilize it, and so that, you know, animals don't have to go through having their paw chopped off or having their leg amputated. It's not needed.
Well, and they didn't even know if it was going to stop it. It was more just, let's chop it off and see what happens. We think it's going to work.
You know, the thing that gets me is how would you feel if someone told you that, well, you've got a bump on your arm, let's cut the arm off. Really? That strikes me as it's a little bit over the top.
They do that with women on breast cancer. I mean, that's what we do now. That's the solution. You chop off your breast.
And a radical mastectomy, you know, granted, that's not the crux of what we do, but I have, you know, quite a few people in my life that have gone through procedures, have had breast cancer. That too, if you look at the history, you know, if you read The Emperor of All Maladies, which is, it's a really good book, but if you read that and you look at it, you see why those therapies exist. And a lot of times it's not for the right reasons. It's not because it's therapeutically the best. It's because it was what was approved at that particular moment from a whole host of other circumstances, not just what was biologically relevant and beneficial. You know, there's a lot of money at play and a lot of other influences at play. I mean, it's a society. It's not that we always go for the best product and the best approach. We go for the product and the approach that generally people will push because they have something to gain from it.
Yeah, that's too bad. This show has seen a lot of that.
I'm sure.
It is what it is. Well, will you stick around and answer a couple questions for my patrons?
I would love to.
Thank you so much. And again, I'll have all your contact information below. And
yeah, terrific.
You are amazing. I feel like you're the modern day Tesla. I am so honored. I'm just so honored to be your friend and, you know, help you spread this.
Well, that's big shoes to fill. So hopefully we do some great things here. If there's anything I can do, and a lot of your listeners have actually reached out to me personally, and I will help anybody with anything I can. So feel free. My email is ian@lifepetllc.com. If you have concerns or questions about your animals and there's something you think I can help with, don't hesitate.